Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 31. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-list geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me today is my special guest, John Willis. John, catch us up.
Hey, David. How you guys? Glad to be on. Yeah, I mean, I've been following you for years. It's like when I got pinged the other day to get on your podcast, I'm like, holy Mac, man, that's pretty cool. I haven't, you know, like I've been a big fan of yours for many years. So cool. Yeah, no, so John Willis, and I'm Bachigaloop on Twitter. I'm actually right now working for a small startup, just kind of coming out of stealth mode, called Stateless Networks. And we're focusing on the kind of DevOps for the new breed of networking technologies, you know, virtual switches, software-based switching, SDN, all that good stuff. So fun stuff.
Yeah, it is fun stuff. I love that. I love that whole world. And you focus primarily on DevOps, right?
That's been my, you know, I've been an ops guy, really. You know, I my background, I was just explaining to somebody the other day, I'm like getting pretty old. I mean, this is my fourth decade of technology, but I've always been an ops guy. I mean, my first job was in operations for Exxon, you know, back in the 80s, right? So on mainframes and, you know, built assembler, built, always worked around operational infrastructure. For those people who are old enough, there was a company called Candle. Who had mainframe technology management solutions, monitoring. I worked for startups that competed with those guys, did assembler coding. I moved into the Tivoli portfolio for many years. I always say I have scars up and down my legs from all the work I did with the Tivoli portfolio. And then found my way into the kind of cloud open source world over the, probably this last decade or so. And just DevOps just seemed like a natural for somebody who just loves IT infrastructure, is a junkie of infrastructure, the larger the scale, the more I'm interested in DevOps, just fit me like a glove. So,
yeah, it seems to be an emerging area right now, and there's huge benefits. It seems the ROI is fairly quick, and people who are setting up some DevOps stuff, we're seeing a ton of it as well. So welcome to the podcast. So events coming up, Red Hat Summit, I'm speaking there. That's going to be in April, Google away from that. Also, I'm going to be at Structured Data next week in New York City. So if you're at that conference, stop by and see me. I'll just be there for one day, but I'm also doing, I think, the mapping session on Wednesday. The Data Warehouse Institute conference coming up in the summer, Google away for that, doing a talk on cloud and database, what else? And then also Structure, GigOm Structure coming up in June in San Francisco, and looking real forward to that. That's always a pretty good event. So webinars coming up, go to www.cloudtp.com and check out the schedule. We've got a few out there. Mike Cavas is doing a few, and we're keeping you up to date on where technology is going, including DevOps technology. And make sure to follow us there and keep track of us there. So coming forward, we got kind of the initial story here. And this one's in GigOm. And this is a DevOps-related story. So I figured it'd be great for you, John. So DevOps, does DevOps leave security out in the cold? It took a lot of work to get developers and IT ops people to cooperate. Yeah, it's still taking a lot of work. The next step, getting them to factor in security at the beginning of the process. And it looks like, you know, ultimately they're saying that the DevOps basically, you know, making developers and operations work together, maybe finding that security is not getting the attention that it needs, according to the article. So, you know, it's not an idle question, according to Barb Darrell, who wrote the article. In the age of where IT organizations are increasingly paranoid about data leakage and outright theft. And do you think this is a true problem that you're seeing out there, John? Do you think that this is something that we seem to be solving as DevOps is kind of emerging in the enterprise?
Well, it's kind of funny because at the core of DevOps, it's really about collaboration. You know, I mean, the poster child for DevOps has been the classic wall of dev and ops battling it out, right? And there's this wall of confusion. Andrew Schaefer, little idea on Twitter, came up, you know, back in 2009, I think, where he wrote this little caricature of the guy trying to get over the wall on ops and fighting, yelling over the wall to the guy at dev, right? But at the core, I think this was about using some of the agile and lean ideas to basically destroy that wall and create like this fluent flow of solutions and technologies. So it was never really meant to be, you know, purely dev and ops, and then because people over the years have been said, well, why don't we call it like DevSecOps, or why don't we, what about the network guys, right? It was just that the kind of the stake in the ground was the one that was so obvious to anybody who's been in the data center of the war that you normally see, or even worse than that, like, I mean, software development did the whole agile thing, right? And ops was just still stuck in a waterfall mentality, right? So early on, I think, the enthusiasm of the people that were ops-centric, that really were excited about the idea of collaborating with dev and, joining with them in their source control to put our stuff like the, our metadata, build a DSL around how do you build infrastructure, things like Chef and Puppet. And I think what happened is a lot of the other groups saw that kind of enthusiasm, as arrogance, like, oh yeah, those guys think they have it all solved, and but they didn't even talk to the sec guys. So I think that's the first, kind of high level. It really is about, communication, collaboration. Now, I will say that there's guys out of Austin doing a fantastic job, and it's not just Austin, but there's a whole movement called, and Gene Kim is a big part of this too, called Rugged Ops. It's kind of a subgroup of, or a sub theme of DevOps, where they're really addressing, end-to-end testing with security using things like Cucumber and Selenium for actually, using kind of same methodology that people have done for server configuration in the security space, right? Build abstract definitions for your security changes, run them through, kind of a test-driven development. So I think there is a lot of excitement. It's not getting as much noise or, oxygen as the, what the classic, dev and ops story. But there's that great stuff. And the one thing else I want to say, David, is that the idea is that this is a collaboration. So security is a perfect fit for DevOps, because it isn't like, oh my God, we're going to really break everything and this cowboy effect of doing things the way these kind of DevOps guys. The idea actually really is you start putting all your meta and IP knowledge about security in one place, and that becomes the driver or the source of truth of how the automation drives things. And that's what we experienced with server builds. Early on, we were called cowboys in the DevOps. We were walking into people saying we should use Chef and Puppet, and that sounded like we were cowboys. And now today, if you're doing scalable infrastructure and you're not using something like a Chef Puppet or some of the other tools, I mean, you're the odd man out, right? Because now it really does work when you can store your stuff in a common source of truth and meta and drive things from a desired configuration. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. So is this an organizational challenge? Is this a technology challenge? It seems like the technology's there. We just don't seem to be, at least according to the article, in some instances, collaborating as closely as we should on this case security. But I would also say it's architecture and governance and, some of the what I call the less than exciting things that kind of come along with building applications. It's very difficult for people in the days of, Agile and Scrum and all that kind of stuff to kind of make sure we bake in that kind of rigor. Or do you think yeah, that's the case?
No, and I think it's kind of it's a lot of things. One, it definitely is culture, right? It's funny, I'm doing the same thing with the network space right now. I'm trying to go out to classic network architects and tell them that they should be putting the things they do in config commands, on switches. They should actually store those in source control, and I'm getting some, but it's really not a lot different than what happened, 7-8 years ago when I went to classic sysadmins and told them that they should, basically shouldn't be going into a server in production and updating a config file, right? And I think for the security is the same thing. So there is this kind of cultural, oh my God, that seems real scary. That's kind of the first hurdle of, that this idea that some engine other than them. And then there is the really, quite frankly, it is the, it's the kind of fear of their control, right? You've been the expert. You are the domain expert. I'm not making light of that. It's important. The network architects are very important. You can't just go be a cowboy in the network. You can't be a cowboy in the security. But you can't be a cowboy in the server world too. And we've gotten past that, right? So I think there is that fear of control. Some of it's kind of job protection. Some of it's just, hey, those guys really don't know me. And then there is, again, this kind of pushback effect of, well, this DevOps thing, those guys think they can solve everything, right? And it's our enthusiasm that sounds like we're arrogant, and we and a lot of us do a bad job of this, right? We walk in and we say, oh, you're not automating that. You're an idiot. You know, I mean, we don't say that, but it sounds like that. And they're like, well, you don't even know my environment. You know, why, how, you know. So I think the technology is certainly emerging. The idea of abstraction and test-driven development and putting security and network into the same flow as software and server configuration and application configuration. I mean, it's all there. It's a mentality of people within the IP or the expert, the subject matter experts in that field have to emerge and become the champions and the experts of the hows and what not to do.
I see you're making your point strongly by banging on the table.
Yeah, there you go. You heard that. That's cool.
Yeah, sure we did. So anyway, moving on to the next story is something you brought, which is related. So using culture as a strategic weapon, I guess this is around in the DevOps environment. Tell me a bit about that topic.
Sure. So really early on in it, actually one of the things I was lucky enough to go to the first DevOps days in Ghent in 2000 in Belgium 2009, and it was to me, it was that I was saying earlier, like DevOps fit like a glove. I sit in there, it was like 30 or 40 people that we all had the same idea of, my God, you know, that we could actually do operations and collaborate with software engineering correctly. And then the next year, I worked with I happened to be at OpsCode. I was early in as an OpsCode guy, and my CEO at the time, Jesse Robbins, was one of the coordinators of Velocity, the O'Reilly conference. So I kind of schemed up, why don't we run the first DevOps day in the U.S., it piggybacking with the Velocity. And so I worked that out with the O'Reilly folks, and it was like ridiculously successful. Like, you know, 200 people, the aura, all the people, like-minded people, and me and my good friend Damon Edwards, we run this DevOps Cafe podcast. And the next podcast we did after that, we didn't even have a guest. We were just like, how do we even explain to the people who weren't there what happened? And we came up with this acronym called CAMS. And it really, we didn't intend to create an acronym. Like, it wasn't our, like, we're going to put a taxonomy on DevOps. We just, at the end, we were like, wow, there's this kind of culture, automation, measurement, and sharing. And that's kind of what we see as a loose taxonomy. Again, not with the idea of ever creating an acronym that, you know, in the cloud we call what, the SPI, right? Like, that wasn't our intent, like, you know, SaaS, PaaS, and infrastructure. But the thing is, you know, as we've learned over the few years of seeing people do things right, you know, I think most people would say that, you know, it's you know, you can't do AMS without the C. You can't, you know, automation, measurement, sharing without the C. It really starts with culture and understanding the culture and the why of what you're trying to do. And, you know, and we've been trying to say this for 20 years, 30 years, and I've been in IT for 35 years now, right? But it's not a poster. In you know, when you watch Facebook and Facebook give a presentation they did it at Velocity a couple of years, how do you get to 1 billion users, right? That's the name of the presentation. And very little in that presentation was about technology. It was all about culture. And so one of the things I started doing last year is doing these presentations of culture as a strategic weapon. And I started looking at these companies, and the thing that hit me the hardest was I'm watching some of the sharpest ops people I know go to work for GitHub, and some of them are saying they're taking a cut in pay to get there. Now, I don't know their salary and all, but and they could be joking or not joking. But the point is, the people who I have the most respect for seem to want to go to GitHub and not for money. And, like, you know, in the Valley right now, you have, you know, companies just, you know, killing each other to increase salary, you know, Facebook versus, you know, Netflix versus Twitter versus Square. And it's just, you know, it's crazy what people can hop around in terms of salaries if they're the right skill. And here these guys are kind of jokingly saying they're taking a cut pay GitHub. So I started exploring this. Maybe that's the real weapon. Like, if there's a hiring war, like, maybe the real weapon is finding the people. And I don't know if you've ever read Simon Sinek's Start With Why, the book. There's a great TED presentation, but the book's way better. And, you know, and he says that a magical company, he doesn't say magical company, I'm paraphrasing, is a company where the people, the why of the people that work there match the why of the people that basically acquire and buy the services of that company. And I'm watching companies like GitHub and Etsy, and kind of, and I did this kind of analysis of it. It's all about culture first. The tools are so secondary. I mean, these companies have incredible technology stacks, and they do incredible things from an operations and how they do flow and continuous delivery and all that. A lot of these companies joke that, you know, their developers will push to production on the first day at work, right? That's, but that all of that is secondary to if you really peel the onion on these companies. And you know, I love I think Netflix is a good example of a culture as a strategic weapon. I personally don't think I would want to work for Netflix. It seems like a very – and people are going to be mad at me saying this, that it seems like they're a mercenary culture. I mean, in other words, you better be great. You're going to come in, and if we think you're great and you tell us that you're great and you – I'm pounding on the table again – and you tell me that you're great, like you're going to come in here. But look, guess what? If you're not great, there's a Reed Hastings quote on a presentation that says adequate performance gets a generous severance, right? So – again, like not everybody is set out for that kind of like you better be great every decision. You're going to have to make hard decisions all the time. But if you're that kind of person, then you probably want to go to work for Netflix, right? And I think these companies are starting to figure out like this is our weapon. Like understand our culture, not apologize for it, not try to meld it into something that's not, and then basically go find the kind of people. That, you know, and I'll say one quick last thing is there's a great video presentation of the woman who was one of the founders of Netflix, Patty McCord. And she does this presentation. She was HR. She was chief talent acquisition officer or something. And she does this presentation where she talks about that culture of how they find the kind of people and that, you know, that match. And so I think, and I did, you know, all through 2013, I did a lot of presentations on this idea of, you know, how do you find your why? How do you hire for people that match that why? And does that why match? You know, I always say this is my last thing, but I'm going to say one more last thing. And that's, you know, Etsy, if you go out to their, they talk about code as craft. So Etsy, for people that don't know, is kind of an arts and crafts eBay, right? And so the idea is, those guys, they think their CEO is a software developer, Chad Dickinson, and they think the developers think like they're artisans, and they basically create services and software for people who create things. They create weird lampshades or strange desks, and I think they're a great example of the kind of Simon Sinek, that two halves of the why.
Well, so if we're architecting culture, in order to kind of get to, you know, enabling processes that we think are going to be of value, I mean, shouldn't the processes or the value of those processes really kind of enable the culture versus the culture enabling the processes?
Yeah, I think you have to have the culture. I mean, again, I think if you look at, I think the greatest, you know, my kind of tunnel vision, but probably the greatest cultural or maybe the greatest experiment in management in the last 100 years might be Toyota Production Systems, right? Which basically, you know, created Lean, which, you know, became, you know, there's so many things we can attribute back to Toyota Production Systems, right? You know, one of the great quotes about, there's a Harvard Business Review where they were trying to figure out what the hell was, what was going on there? You know, what was so crazy? It was like what I was doing last year about like, what's going on at GitHub? What's going on at Etsy? But the Harvard Business Review, and there was a great quote in there. It says that the Toyota Production Systems was a community of scientists continually experimenting. Right. So that at the core, everybody thought like everything was kind of scientific method, whether you were a floor person, whether you were a floor manager, whether you were on the line, whatever. And I do think that your culture, once you get that right, the tools kind of fall in place. I mean, there's technologies that you have to select and pick, and there's ones that are better than others. But I'm kind of a firm believer that, and I get into arguments with a lot of my tools friends, right? I got best friends that the founder, my best friend Adam Jacob, founder of OpsCode, he's the greatest guy I know, and you know, we get into these battles of what's more important. And I don't know who's right or wrong. I firmly believe you have to get that why and that culture, and then you kind of snap fit everything into that.
So culture first, process second.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is kind of funny because when you it comes down to human beings, even though we're technologists that are able to enable this stuff, you know, and work with it correctly. And that's where I think a lot of even some of the cloud deployments fall down. They just don't have the culture to innovate. Even on the provider side, they don't have the innovative culture to kind of get into areas and do things, you know, what I call a natural act sometimes, to get into spaces and to, you know, do things that haven't been done before, you know, and leveraging, you know, kind of this new technology, which is the cloud. And DevOps is kind of like that. Even though I think all the piece parts and the processes are known, we're not doing anything that's in essence, you know, cutting edge. The ability to kind of combine it and make it work really comes down to the people's ability to do that. And I think that's where people typically fall short. I mean, the culture is always the challenge. You know, I'm good with the technology. I'm sure you're good with the technology. Everybody's good with the technology. We can figure it out if you have enough time and money. But the ability to kind of change minds and human beings and all these sorts of things to make it work and productive, you know, really is where we end up, you know, breaking our picks. Am I being too pessimistic?
No, you're spot on, of course. And you know, I mean, years ago, I wrote this article called The Five Whys of Cloud, right? And, you know, if anybody knows the five whys from, you know, from Eric Ries, but it actually goes back to Toyota Production Systems, you know, and I see if I can remember it, but it kind of bugged me that every time I talk to people about why you're doing a cloud, they'd be like, oh, why? That's a stupid question. To get fast provisioning time. I did this kind of like, okay, let's start asking a bunch of people. And you ask people, why are you going to cloud? Well, because now we can get our servers in, you know, 5 minutes instead of, you know, 2 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, 100 days. I don't know. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, if you know the five why game, you keep asking why, right? Till you get to the root cause. And I'm like, okay, why is that good? I'm like, well, what do you mean? You know, fast provision. I'm like, no, just play with me. Give me one more why. And okay, well, because I guess the developers can get resources faster. I'm like, okay, why is that good? And then they'd be like, they actually get annoyed with me. Like, oh, what do you mean? The developers are getting resources faster, right? That's not enough. I'm like, no, I want another why. And then, you know, then I didn't say, well, I guess because they can, you know, make their widgets faster. Okay, why? You know, now you're almost getting punched in the nose. Like, and I'm like, no, okay, I need another why. And I'm like, well, God darn it, John, because we can start making more money. I'm like, then you totally missed the point. That was the first question.
Right. So you think we're missing the core reason why this stuff exists.
I think in a lot of ways people get mad at me if we tend to cargo cult, right? Like everybody thinks that what you have to be doing right now, no matter what corporation you are, and I'm really trying not to pound the desk right now, is that you have to put up OpenStack. You hear this and if I hear another, I have to have OpenStack done by May. You know, or the whole world ends. You work with a customer and you're trying to help them understand things, and they're like, "Yeah, but John, we have to get this OpenStack." You know, like, do you have any experience? No. Do you, you know, how do you? Doesn't matter. Has to be up by May, you know, end of May. You know, like you want to, like, well, wait a minute, let's slow down. Like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And it just seems everybody right now is convinced that there's a checkbox and it's got to be a private cloud. And it, like, 9 out of 10 times has to be OpenStack. You know, meanwhile, as we both know, because I've been following you for years and you've talked a lot about this, that, you know, we're watching a lot of why stories happening with public clouds, right? This group has to get some things out. They're in a digital services group of a large corporation. They've got real demands for things that they have to put out. Somebody there figures out how to use Amazon and they start putting this stuff out and they start working with it. Things start happening fast. You know, and meanwhile, I think this kind of, you know, this binary thinking of an organization is that, you know, we must decide on a private cloud strategy. Okay, Tuesday, it must be OpenStack. Okay, Wednesday, when does it have to be in? By the end of May. great, let's get started.
Mm. Yeah, I know that. Well, it comes down to, I think, internal commitments made, you know, promises made, and kind of that's what you're seeing. And those promises are made because I think that the executives in the company, you know, believe cloud computing is going to save them a ton of money, and they want them to go ahead and start making progress. And people start, in essence, kind of making progress that other companies are making. And so everybody is moving to a private cloud, and everybody is looking to stand up a few instances in Amazon. And that seems to be the urgency around not necessarily asking the strategic questions as to where this stuff, you know, where this stuff needs to go. And I think that's a missing piece of it. But I think we'll get better over time as more guys like yourself and myself, you know, do stop people and ask the why question and the reasons and the business case and the changes that need to occur and the really, you know, how it's going to be impactful or not on the business. And that seems to be the boring part that no one wants to address, because it's kind of cool to go out there and play with technology. If you get into, you know, I think advice in terms of understanding strategic direction and understanding the business value, people's eyes still glaze over. Anyway, please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on Softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. Read my blog on InfoWorld and GigaOhm Pro. Also, please make sure to keep an eye out for my new book, Full Contact Cloud Computing, available later this year. Also, please don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for current news, links to this podcast, more ways to contact us directly. Twitter address is David Linthicum, LinthiCum, and your Twitter, John?
Botchgaloop.
Make sure you follow him. He's got great ideas, great concepts, and following the DevOps, which is hugely emerging right now and hugely important that you guys get right within your enterprise in the next couple of years. I can't stress that enough. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys take great care. Bye-bye.